Good morning. Today's daf in Megillah, Chaf Vav. We are starting the new parak of the Masechta, and I say the new and the last. There are four prakim over here to the Masechta, and so we are going to be beginning this morning the fourth and final parak. It deals with the Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. So again, it's a topic not necessarily connected to the Masechta. I'm sure there are those that are going to try to make connections, but nevertheless, though, it belongs somewhere in Shas, and so this is a good place for it to go. This is the Masechta dedicated to Megillah. Megillah is lain din hashul. Okay. But as we already pointed out at the beginning of the Masechta, this Masechta is broken up into two halves. The first half is dealing really primarily with Megillah and the halachas of Kriyas and Megillah. First parak deals with when we read the Megillah. Second parak deals with how to read the Megillah. And then the third parak deals with Kriyas HaTorah. The fourth parak deals with Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, because obviously all this is going to be taking place in hashul. A shul has kedusha, so that is a halachic reality. It's not just things that we say, which try to inspire people when they come to shul, but which is also true. But on top of that, it also has halachic ramifications as well. And so, over the course of this parak, we're going to be talking about the halachic ramifications of a shul having kedusha. We start with the Mishnah: Bnei Ha'ir Shemachru Rechova She'ir. So you have the members of the city who are selling the street of the city. So I say street. So it's probably not a good a description. It seems to be like the square, town center, if you will. So lochin bedama beis haknesses. Now that rechava has some sort of kedusha, a modicum of kedusha. The Gemara is going to explain the reason being that they assemble there from time to time. They make a minyan over there. We've been noticing last couple of years with the pandemic that's what we do. We make makeshift shuls. Out of our blocks, and so basically that's what we're describing over here. So in the proceeds of that sale now, so it has kedusha. In other words, what we're basically looking at is the kedusha is now transferring from the rechova onto the money. The money now has a kedusha to the same level as the rechova, as the street. And so therefore, what can you do? So as you will become clear over the course of this Mishnah, malim bekodesh, you can go up in kedusha vein maridim, but you cannot go down in kedusha. As a result of that, you have to purchase with that money something that has more kedusha. What has more kedusha than the rechava? So that's, of course, the shul, the Beis HaKnesses. Beis HaKnesses, let's say you sell a shul. We're going to be talking today in terms of the ability to sell a shul, but you sell a shul, lochin teva. So now, once again, the rule is malim b'kodesh. You have to go up in kedusha. So therefore, what you can do with that money is you can buy teva. Teva is one level above in kedusha. Teva lochin mitpachas. Teva, by the way, is an aron, right? I think we all know that. Anyway, you sell a teva. So what can you buy now with it? Mitpachas. It covers for the Sefer Torah. A mantle is what we describe it as. Now, mitpachas. Now, let's say you sell the mantle. So yichu svarim. So now you can buy svarim. Svarim over here says Rashi Nevim Ksuvim. So that's going to be an elevation in Kedusha. Svarim. Now, let's say you sell svarim lochim Torah. So now you can buy Sefer Torah. Okay. So what we just learned together are six items, one having more kedusha than the other. And so when you sell an item, the only direction you can go is up. Obviously, you don't have to go directly up. Meaning if you buy if you sell something that has level, kedusha level, let's say I would write a number six being the lowest of the kedusha, number one being the highest of kedusha. So let's say you sell the rechava. So of course you can buy an item with kedusha level three or kedusha level two. That's fine. It's just that the Mishnah over here is just giving us the pecking order, the hierarchy of what has Kedusha directly over what. And so there are six items that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Now, let's go in the other direction. The Mishnah just does exactly that. We are in Chavav Amid Aleph, Aval. Imach v'tor lo yichu, svarim svarim lo yichu, mitpachos lo yichu, teva teva lo yichu, beis hakenesses lo yichu, es rechov, v'chein b'mosrehen. So the Mishnah says, but you can't go in the other direction. Anytime you saw something of a higher Kedusha, you can't take the money and now purchase something with a lower kedusha. And the Mishnah just simply went backwards. We went from six to one. Now we're going from one back down to six, and you can't do that. V'chein b'mosrehem, and anything is true regarding the surplus as well. That means to say that, let's say I sell a rechava, and I have money that's left over. That leftover money is still going to have the kedusha. So all the money is going to have the kedusha, not only the items in which I make a purchase, but even any leftover money as well. Good. The rule of the Mishnah, even though the Mishnah doesn't say the words, but the words obviously are Malim Bekodesh Vein Maridin. That becomes the operating factor regarding what you can and cannot purchase with once you have money that has the Kedusha of the item itself. Take a look at Rashi over here. Really interesting Rashi. Tosefta. Rashi on Chavava Med Aleph, it's second line down. So Malam Mikodesh Tichsi Vayakam Moshe Esa Mishkan. So Bitzel Asa Moshe Shayagadu Mimenu Hekimo. So the Tosefta actually has a source of this rule of Malam Mikodesh Vein Moridin, meaning we use this rule numerous times throughout Shas. The Gemara and Shabbos, when talking about the lighting of the Chanukah, so the fact that you have to go up every night according to Beis Hillel, Malam Mikodesh Vein Moridin, and there are numerous other examples of this principle. However, what we never see in the Gemara Bavli is we never see an explanation in terms of how do we know this? What's the source of this halacha? So Rashi over here quotes a source based on a Tosefta. In terms of the Mishkan, so Bezalel put it together, Moshe actually erected it. So that's Malam Mikodesh Vein Moridin. And it's interesting, by the way, in terms of the example, because we're using people as an example of Malam Mikodesh Vein Moridin. Okay. Those shovels that were used by Korach v'Adaso, so ultimately what happens is that they're going to be repurposed, but when being repurposed, they can't be used for something that's less than it was used for. It can't go down. And so that says the Tosefta is a source for Ein Moridin. So we have a source for Malam Mikodesh Vein Moridin. Okay, what is conspicuously absent in the Mishnah, and the truth of the matter is the Gemara is not going to discuss this, so I'll just raise it right now, and that is what about making a lateral move? In other words, in the Mishnah, what we learn is that you can go up, you can't go down. Okay, so how about making a lateral move? Is that going to be okay? So it's not discussed in the Mishnah. As you can imagine, it is discussed in the Rishonim, and you can literally go back and forth on this issue of in terms of whether or not you are allowed to make a lateral move. If you buy something, can I buy something of equal Kedusha? And from the Mishnah, it is perfectly unclear. Because the Mishnah says you have to go up. Oh, okay, fine. So lateral move is no good. Then the Mishnah says you can't go down. Oh, then the lateral move is good. Okay, so as you could see, so there's plenty of room to discuss and deliberate whether or not buying something of the same Kedusha is going to be acceptable or unacceptable. We start with the Gemara. B'nei Yer Shemachu Rechov V'Sho'ir Amar Rabba Bar Bachanam Rav Yochanan Zudivrei Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosi Stum Asa. Our Mishnah represents a Tana, but just one Tana. So Rav Yochanan has a Masorah that our Mishnah belongs to the Peshitta of Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosi. Bar Yosi. Ava Chachamim Omer Ma Rechov Ein Bo Mishum Kedusha. But as far as the Chachamim are concerned, the Rechov that has simply no Kedusha. Meaning it's just simply part of a municipality, but it does not have any Kedusha per se. And the Gemara goes over the back and forth. Rabbi Menachem Bar Yosef, my time, oh, the Hamas Palamba Batanis, Taneos of Mamados. So Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Menachem would be of the position that, look, because of its occasional usage, during the Mamados, which we discussed already a couple of times, we discussed it in some detail at the end of Masech Tanis there in the fourth parak. We also touched on it a little bit over here in Megillah as well. So we do get together during the Ma'amados. Also on public fast days, we do get together in the Rechov. So as a result of that, because of its occasional usage, so therefore it obtains a modicum level of Kedusha. And the Chachamim will say, well, that's just on occasion. On occasion is not enough in order for it to become a Makum Kedusha. And so the Gemara simply gives us a basic Svara back and forth between the two shitas, now that we know that our Mishnah only represents the Das Yachid, so therefore it is fair to speculate and argue that the halacha does not follow like our Mishnah, meaning the halacha would in fact follow like the shita of the Chachamim, that the Rechov simply has no Kedusha whatsoever. Although I will tell you, though, that Rav Yochanan throughout Shas also is of the position that halachic is Stam Mishnah, and so our Mishnah is obviously a Stam Mishnah. Okay, so once again, I could definitely see back and forth on whether or not we paskin like Rabbi Menachem, or in fact we paskin like the Chachamim. Beis HaKnesses Lochin Teva, if you sell a shul, so the proceeds of that money, you have to go up in Kedusha, and so an Aron would be an elevation Kedusha. Am Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Am Rabbi Yonasan, Lo Shanu Ala Beis HaKnesses Shul Kfarim, Ava Beis HaKnesses Shul Krachim, Kevin Demi Amma Aselei, Lo Matzei Mizavnilei. Our Mishnah starts with the assumption that you can sell a shul. And so what the Gemara now is commenting on is that that's not always true. Meaning, there are occasions where you simply don't have the right to sell a shul. And so the Gemara notes that if it's a shul shul kfarim, Now, earlier in the Masechta, so we spent a lot of time talking about the difference between Kfarim and Ayaros, or Kfarim and Krachim. So over here, we're using similar terminology, but we don't really mean the same thing over here. Kfar just simply means a small town shul. So for a small town shul, so that is sellable. We do have the ability to sell a small town shul. But if it's a shul that belongs to a krach over here, in the beginning of the Masechta, we talked about it in terms of it being a walled city. Krach in this context over here just simply means a big city. So if it's a shul of a big city, so then we lack the ability to sell it. We simply cannot sell a shul of a big city. So the Havalei Derabim, so the Gemara says, and the reason why is because it's public. Now we will further clarify what that means in a moment, that it's public. So Amar Ravashi, Habikinishta Demas Mechasi, Afagav Demiama Asa. So Ravashi says, look, the shul of Mas Mechasia. So that was a town back in the day, a Babylonian town. Comes up a number of times throughout Shas. So Ravashi says, look, I know it's a big town. I know it's a city. But nevertheless, so that shul you're allowed to sell. Why, Kevin? The Adaite, the Dikasu, because really the truth of the matter is that it's really all, it's basically my shul. Now again, I'm gonna try to further define what that means, public shul, my shul. So, right, those are, at this point in time, these are still ambiguous terms. Hopefully, we'll try to wrap our heads around a little bit better in just a moment. So, so he says, good. So that means to say now that it's my shul. So even though it's in a city, but I have the ability to go ahead and to sell it. Okay, so let us make an attempt, because here's what we basically just learned, that when it comes to a kfar, a small town shul, that you have the ability to sell. If it comes to a shul of a city, of a big city, you can't sell it. Why? So the Gemara says something along the lines of Kevin de Me'ame Ase. People are going to it from all over. So that requires, obviously, some clarification, some explanation. Let's take a look at Tosus. Tosus over here struggles a little bit. Tosus offers two explanations in terms of what that means. I am looking at the top Tosos. Kevin de Me'ame Kasele Nira Lefarish. So I think the pshat goes as follows. Pshat number one of Tosos is that, look, it's expected that this shul is going to be used by not just the locals, but people from elsewhere as well. Even though they didn't contribute a single dollar to the shul, nevertheless, the shul is a more public place. Public, not publicly funded, but public just simply means that it was built for the public. The city is where it's a center point. People are coming from all over. So when the shul was built, it was built for the use of the public. So therefore now it's an elevation in Kedusha to the extent in which you can't sell it. That's the first pshat that Tosus offers. The Od Yesh Lafarish, but then Tosus offers a second pshat. So in the second pshat of Tosos, so everything over here is financial. The difference between public and private is what we normally, how we interpret the words public versus private, and that's the funding. So Tosos' second pshat is that when you have a shul of a city, so if in fact it's publicly funded, so then you can't sell it because it no longer belongs to an individual and now belongs to the public. On the other hand, if it's privately funded, so then you can go ahead and you can sell it. Now, Tosos says the second pshat, so it works a little bit better with what we just learned. Because we just learned in the Gemara Ravashi said, look, I know Mas Mechasi is a city. I know it's a big city. But nevertheless, I can go ahead and I can sell the shul. Why? Because it's my shul. So in Tosos' second pshat, what he means by that is no public money. In other words, I purchased a shul all on my own. And so therefore, because this is not a public entity, but rather it's a private entity the way you and I speak, meaning in terms of money. So therefore, as a result of that, I do have, in fact, the right to sell it. So how would you learn the Ravashi according to the first pshat of Tosos? So that's a wonderful question. And that certainly demands an answer. But okay, good. At least we have two working pshatim in the Gemara right now in terms of the making a distinction between a public versus a private shul. So a private shul can be sold, a public shul cannot be sold. And now just a question of what does that mean it's a public shul? According to Tosos' first pshat, it was built for the public, even though they didn't contribute. And according to the Tosfos, the second pshat, it means that they was actually funded by the public. Next way, the Gemara challenges. I'm Rav Yehuda Maisa. We're back to the Gemara. We're about a third of the way down. Maisa, sorry. I'm Rav Yehuda Maisa. By basic anesha shetor same shayibu shalayim. So there was this shul that was operated by a certain guild, and it was in Yerushalayim. Coppersmith, the Coppersmith Guild. Shemachru le Rabbi Eliezer, v'asaba kol tzrachav. They sold it to Rabbi Eliezer, and he did with it whatever he wanted. V'asam dekrachim hava. So the Gemara says now that Yerushalayim is obviously a city, and it's a shul of a city, and it was sold. And now the Gemara is wondering a simple question: the propriety of the sale. Didn't we just establish that you can't sell the shul of a city? So ayi bekenishta zute hava. V'inu avdua. So the Gemara says, nah, it's a small shul, and they made it. So again, in that second pshat of Tosfos, it's an easy pshat over here. What do you mean they made it? Meaning they paid for it. They funded it. Meaning it was only this group to the exclusion of, they didn't do any fundraising, they didn't do any capital campaign, they didn't get money from outside, and so as a result of that, they have the right to sell it. Okay, so for the second pshat of Tosfos, it works out a lot better. A lot easier, I should say. I don't want to say better. First pshat of Tosfos, okay, you're going to have to work a little bit harder to understand this Gemara based on the first pshat of Tosfos. Meitzvei, we're going to ask again. Be'beis eretz achuzaschem. Achuzaschem metame benegayim ve'en yushlaim metame benegayim. So here's a brisa. Now, it should sound familiar because we did this brisa back in Yuma. We're doing it again here in Masechta Megillah. And that is that which houses are going to be eligible for negayim. Now, negayim is a discoloration. But even if your house is in fact discolored to the discoloration of what would normally be a nega, it depends. It has to be a house on land that's an achuza. So if it's not an achuza, it's simply not subject to negayim. And even if it has a proper discoloration, it doesn't qualify as a nega. So the ein Yerushalayim metame b'negayim, and Yerushalayim now is going to be not considered an achuza, therefore, no house in Yerushalayim, even if it has the right discoloration, will not qualify as being a nega. Now, I'm Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shamati ala makom mikdash bavad. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, not Yerushalayim, just the base of mikdash. So, how about the kinesis, about the midrashos mitamim? So, the Gemara says, so I don't understand. That means that any shul in Yerushalayim is in fact going to become tamik with nega. So amai had to krachim havu, and again, I don't understand. It's a public place. And didn't you tell me that only private housing and private property is subject to negayim, and public places are not subject to negayim? And meanwhile, we're saying that according to the sheet of Rabbi Huda, only the makom mikdash is exempt from negayim, which means shuls are in fact eligible to become are susceptible to negayim. And that means that shuls now are private places in a public city like Yerushalayim. So, Imam Rabbi Huda, ani lo shamati ala makom mikudash bavad. So the Gemara says, okay, so we'll just do a quick edit over here. He didn't mean makom mikdash. What he meant is makom mikudash, any sanctified area, meaning even shuls as well. Okay, so now it fits in, it conforms to what we know, which is that a shul in a public in a big city is in fact considered a public entity, and that's what Rav Yehuda meant. So b'maikem if we get Tanakam Savalon Nischalka Yerushalayim Shvatim Rav Yehuda Savin Nischalka Yerushalayim Shvatim. Now, vis-a-vis what we just learned together, where according to the Tanakama, the entirety of Yerushalayim is exempt from Negayim, and according to Rav Yehuda, no, just the base of Mikdash, just the shuls, but Yerushalayim is not exempt from Negayim. So what's at the core of the debate? The Gemara says the core of the debate is something that we've gone over numerous times in Shas, and here we get to go over it again in today's daf. And that is that did Yerushalayim get what was a portion, was allocated to the Shvatim, yes or no? Is it state property? I use this analogy every time. Is it state property or is it federal property? That's the question. So if it's state property, so that means it belongs to one of the Shvatim. If it's federal property, so it belongs to none of the Shvatim. And so the Gemara says, "Vaplukta dahani tanai." And the Gemara says, "This machlokis." So it resonates. It keeps occurring again and again. Detanya, we learned in a brisa, Maya bechelkosh Yehuda. So what was in the chelik of Yehuda? Meaning we're learning a brisa now that Yerushalayim was divided amongst two Shvatim, Sheva Yehuda, Sheva Binyamin. And basically a line is drawn right through the Beis HaMikdash, dividing the section of Yehuda and the section of Binyamin. So Har HaBayis HaLishkos V'Azaros, I'm sorry, Mahaya B'Chalkos HaYehuda Har HaBayis HaLishkos V'Azaros. So a section of Har HaBayis and some of the chambers and some of the Azaros, the courtyards that belongs to Yehuda. Mahaya B'Chalkos HaBinyamin, as far as the Chalk of Binyamin is concerned, so that's the Ulam Heichal Beis Kadshe HaKadashim Kadashim. Basically, the actual edifice itself, the building itself, was in the Chalak of Binyamin. And as far as that line that's drawn to demarcate, so it, a little bit that line goes and encroaches into the area of Binyamin. And basically, that line is going to be following the Mizbeach. It's running right alongside the Mizbeach. And you can see Rashi over here who goes and describes, and we've done this in the past before, and I'm not gonna dwell on this right now, that part of the Yesod of the Mizbeach is missing as a result of this line. And on another occasion, we'll go over that again. And Binyamin was very worried about this, meaning Binyamin, actual Binyamin himself, Alderich Nevuah, was very concerned about this idea that part of now, the Chalik of Yehuda is gonna encroach into his property. And it's going to swallow it, meaning that Yehuda is going to basically take on some of the actual edifice itself. In fact, if you look at the bracha that was given to Binyamin, so chofef alav kol hayom. Chofef is somebody who like scratches his hair, says Rashi. In other words, somebody who's uncomfortable. So Binyamin was stressed over the fact that Yehuda may in fact encroach. As a result of that, Binyamin was able to host the actual Beis HaMikdash itself because he so much wanted to be the land, the property in which the Beis HaMikdash is going to be placed on. Okay, so aside from the details over here, which obviously are extraordinarily important, but the basic idea, however, of course, is that Yerushalayim is divided amongst the Shvatim. Yerushalayim is state property. It just happens to be that there is some sort of Mason-Dixon line, again, sorry for the American analogies, that runs through Yerushalayim, dividing Chalik of Yehuda and Chalik of Binyamin. Okay, but clearly it's a Chalik of the it's a Chalik. Welcome. It's Nischalik amongst the Shvatim. And never high Tanis ever learned Nischalik Yerushalayim leShvatim Titania. And now I'll give you the other side. Meaning, I'm going to now show you a brisa that says that it wasn't divided amongst the Shvatim. It's not state property, but rather it's federal property. Detanya will enter a brisa in Maskirim Batim Yerushalayim Mimne She'enem Shalayim. You can't rent out houses in Yerushalayim. Meaning, if you have a house in Yerushalayim, so it's not your house. You can't rent it out. And so, therefore, people can stay there when they're Ola L'Rego, so people can come in. Now, practically speaking, how does that work? So, I don't know. I'd love to understand the system a little bit better. In that basically what you're sitting on right now is not owned land, but it is, I don't even know the right words to describe it, but whatever, it's not yours. And because it's not yours, so now during Alila Regal, someone can come in and take up some lodging over there. Okay. Systematically, I'm at a loss in terms of how this actually works, but it doesn't matter. In other words, the point of course over here is that because it's not yours, so therefore when somebody comes in and uses it for Aliyah L'Regel, so they don't have to pay you rent, because it's not yours. And Rebbe Lazar Omer, Af Lo Mitos, they don't have to pay for the actual lodging. They don't even have to pay for the usage of the beds. L'ficha Choros, Kachim, Bala Yushpizchin, Notlin Osam Bizroa. Now, as the guest was leaving, it's a nice way to describe him as a guest, because that's basically, visitors. Yeah, the visitors are leaving. So now, the quote-unquote owner of the home, so what they would do is as follows. Wait 1 second. Before you go, so you just offered a karban. You're coming back home now with all these hides, because remember, by a karban shlamim, so by an ola, so the only thing that's left is the hides, and they go to the kohanim. But by a shlamim, so the, and Rashi says a karban toda as well, but which is another type of shlamim, so the hides are gonna stay by the owner. So what they were planning on doing is going home with the hides, new shoes for the kids, right, new purses, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, so when the visitors left, so the quote unquote homeowner, he would say, look, I'll take your hides. Thank you very much. Now, it's not because they're really entitled to it, because again, you can't charge rent. But in other words, I was nice enough to quote unquote host you. So you'll go ahead and you'll give me the hides. Amar Rabbi Yishma min arachar mishvak inish gufei umashcha beushpiza. And generally speaking, it's derech eretz. Meaning, under normal circumstances, when you are a guest by somebody, so you should leave over some gifts, some parting gifts before you go. Okay? Right? You should leave a tip. And in general, derech eretz would dictate that you should leave something small. Right? Hides or whatever. Something small. Over here in this Yerushalayim setup, because it's so awkward, because the owners of the home are not really the owners of the home. And the guests, you're not really inviting the guests to come in because they're allowed to come in. So over here, we're basically enforcing derech eretz, meaning it's more than just the right thing to do. It's where the owner is going to go ahead and take it a little more forcefully because anyway, it's derech eretz. Okay. So Amar Rava. Anyway, what comes out from all that is, again, the details are interesting, but as far as the larger picture, we just saw Machlokas HaTanayim, whether or not Yerushalayim is state property or whether it's federal property. So according to the previous Tana, who described where exactly the line is drawn between Sheikh Chelek Yehuda and Chelek Binyamin, so clearly he's of the opinion of Chalko L'Shvatim. And the Brisa that we just saw, that anyone who has a house in Yerushalayim does not have the entitlement to collect rent, so he clearly is of the position that it's not Nischalka amongst the Shvatim. Good. Amar Rava. Ran Chavav Amad Alef, two lines from the bottom. Lo shano lo shalom machru shivet uvayir b'mamad anshei ha'ir. So we now talked about the fact that shuls, there are shuls that are unsellable. Meaning if they are shuls of a city, you can't sell the shul. Gemara now is going to go ahead and qualify that. So that's true, but not always. There is a way to sell a shul, even in a big city. And that is the Board of Trustees. So again, I don't know institutionally how things were structured back in the good old days, but we have what's called the Board of Trustees. So it happens to be, it's a great parallel. And I have a really good feeling that's very close to whatever system they had back in the good old days. So in other words, so if the board signs off on the sale of the shul, so then you can go ahead and sell the shul. So Amar Rav Loshanu Ela Shalom Machru Shivetu Ve'ir. B'mamad Anshei Ha'ir. So as long as you are selling the shul with the approval of the board. The board in the Gemara is described as the Sheva Tuveyair, the seven, whatever name or title you want to give them. But basically, they are the ones who are making the executive decisions, are allowed to make the executive decisions. And it also says Bemaimar Anshei Ha'ir, right? That requires a little more explanation exactly what that means. But again, I'm just using my modern sensibilities to explain it. It's basically with the approval of the Board of Trustees. Okay, I'm sure my definition is imprecise, but it certainly all gives us a good idea of what the Gemara is trying to communicate. So, but if the board sells it, so even if, let's say, you take the proceeds of that sale and you make a big party and drinks around for everybody, so that would be fine. Okay, it wouldn't make great press, by the way. Right, the city just sold the shul, and look what they did with the proceeds. They made a big party, and everyone, okay. The point, of course. Oh, okay. So Rashi writes. Thank you. Rashi writes over here. Okay, good anecdote. So Rashi writes over here on the bottom of Chavav Amud Aleph, Lo Shanu. Right, I'm just going to go quickly back to that Rashi. Meaning that if the board of directors is not involved in the sale, so everything now is status quo. Meaning the shul now is going to retain its status of kedusha, and not only that, but the proceeds are going to have the same status of kedusha. Now look at the next Rashi. Ela shalom machru atovim b'rishos ha'am. Aval im machru v'chule. However, if it's done with approval, board approval, again, I'm just using modern terminology because we're used to these terms. Membership approval. So if it's sold with board and membership approval, so Rashi writes, paka kedusha min ha'chefetz u'min ha'damim. So now, basically, everything dissipates. The kedusha goes away. Not only from the shul, but from the proceeds as well. Okay, it's really interesting. How does that work exactly? I'm not sure, right? But certainly the idea is that once the shul is sold with board approval and membership approval, so the idea now that the kedusha totally disintegrates, so just just is sucked up into the air, both on the shul and on the proceeds as well. Okay, that's Rashi is very clear about that.
Maybe it was built
as a chila al tanai. If you want to, I hear you. Doesn't sound. Could be. Doesn't sound.
What happens to a private school?
Yeah, so so if you go back to that Tosfos, so then the beginning of the daf, so again, if it's private, so then according to Tosfos second shot, so you don't need approval, you don't need board approval, you don't need membership approval.
So what about Marita's buffet?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. Okay, good. Ravina, Chavava Medbeis. Ravina Havaleya Hautila de Bekanishta. Ravina had a rubble, a mound of what was once a shul. Also, look, I'm into Rav Ashi, and now he wanted to know. Amarle, Ma'ula Mizri, can I plant in this area? Amarle, Zil Zavni, Meshevetuveir, but Ma'abadan Sheir, Vizara. So, what he had to do is he had to buy the area, he had to buy the land from the board and from the membership, meaning to say that because right now it was once a shul, even though now it's reduced to rubble. And now he just wants to repurpose, and he wants to use the area for planting, but it still has its kedusha. So now you can even do it post facto, and you can do the sale of the however they negotiate the price. You can do the sale of it, and once you do it with Shevetu Ve'ir B'mam and Anshe Ha'ir, so now it's going to lose its kedusha altogether. Rami Bar Abba Hava Kabani Be'Kenishta Hava Ikenishta Atika. Have a bay le mistere ula asuye livne u kishure mina vi iule lahasam. So the following dilemma. Rami Bar Abba had an old shul, and what he wanted to do is he wanted to build a brand new shul. However, in terms of materials, there was some sort of chain supply problem. In other words, he was at a loss in terms of getting new materials. Okay, so what he was gonna do is he was gonna repurpose, take the materials of the old shul and build a new shul. Okay, I know that's funny. Generally speaking, when you want new, you want new. Okay, but neither here nor there. And now he wanted to know. So I know I can't take down an old shul, but over here, I'm looking to build a new shul. So yes, if it comes me by lehad rav chista dam rav chista lo list or bekenishta ad debani bekenishta achrita. Now the Gemara says, look, we have to deal with the statement of Rav Chista. Rav Chista says that you can't demolish an old shul until the new shul is already built. It happens to be in our community, not our shul, but a different shul, is now doing a renovation project. So they're going to be knocking down their shul. It's exactly this Gemara right here. And so Rav Chista says that you can't take down the old shul until you already have built a new shul. Okay. It's whatever. So the, so Hasa Mishum Pshiusa, so Ki Ai Gavna Mai. So the Gemara says as follows. Why? Meaning, what's the reason behind Rav Chista? So is it a question of just simply we're worried about pshia, about negligence? Meaning, look what's going to happen, or what could happen. What could happen is that you knock down the old shul, and then, right, in construction, I'm not in it, but I hear about it all the time, things happen. And after you knocked it down, right, we had the money, we thought we had the money, we had a lot of pledges, et cetera, right? Life happens. And so what we're worried about is that just simply we're going to lose the shul altogether. And once we have now already, once we follow the rule of Rav Chista and we're forced to build the new shul before demolishing the old shul, so then obviously that's a safeguard. So Hasa Mishum Pshiusa Ki Ai Gavna Mai. So the Gemara says now, but over here where I'm telling you, I'm taking the material of the old shul in order to build the new shul. So maybe Rav Chista's concern is no longer a concern. So my Asla Kamed Rav Papa Vasale Lakamed Rav Huna Vasale. So he went to a couple of Amorim, Rav Papa and Rav Huna. He got the same response every time. It's prohibited. Meaning you can't do it. Even though you're going to be repurposing the old material in order to build the new shul, still, the rule of Rav Chista is that you can't take down a new shul you can't demolish the old shul until the new shul is already up.
If he was already turned down by Rav Papa, why'd he go to Rav Huna?
I was wondering the same thing, and I don't have an answer. Okay, Amar Rav Ai Be'Kenishta Chalufa Vizvunei Shari. So the Gemara now goes over what is in fact going to be removing the Kedusha. So if it's an exchange, if it's a sale, so then fine. So under those circumstances, the kedusha will go away. Right? Chalufa vizvuni Rashi. Chala kedusha so al hachiluf o al adamim v'hu yatsa min hakedusha li shtamishbal. Okay, good. So that is a way to deconsecrate. However, ogra umashkana, but if all you're doing is renting it out, or if you're doing is you're just simply mortgaging it against a loan, so then usar. My taima, bikdusha sakai. So the Gemara says, so it still retains its kedusha because it was not a kind of transaction that speaks to permanence. In other words, it's just simply either rented or mortgaged. So livni nami, chilufnayu vizivnay share. The Gemara says the same thing is true regarding the materials. Meaning if I have the materials of an old shul and I exchange it or I sell it, would be okay. Meaning the kedusha would go away. Uzvinu asr. However, I'm just renting it out. That's a funny term, by the way, if you're renting out materials. Okay, but if you're doing that, so under those circumstances, the kedusha goes away. But if I sell or if I exchange, so the kedusha goes away. But if all I'm doing is just renting it out, kedusha does not go away. Hani mila batikta. So that's talking about materials that belong to a shul that was used. Ava bechata leisanba. But if I purchase materials with the plans of building a shul with those materials, under those circumstances, the materials themselves do not gain kedusha. And the Gemara says, now there is a question in terms of setting something aside. Does it obtain status because I set it aside? The topic of Azmana. And even if I maintain the position of Azmana Milsa, that it's significant, that's talking about if I weave a garment for the mace. I made tachrichin. So there, it's significant. Hazmana is significant, even though I didn't put it on the mace already. But nevertheless, just making the tachrichin, so that is considered significant. So, but over here, we're talking about building material, meaning it's so raw, it's so not yet set aside for its purpose that you can't really say that just because I purchased this for the purpose of building a shul, even if I hold hazmana milsa. But it doesn't apply to the building material. It's still in a very raw state. Matana. Okay, so what do we learn? That this sale of a shul, the exchange of a shul, the kedusha goes away. We also learned that a renting of the shul, the mortgaging of a shul, so the kedusha does not go away. Okay, the Gemara wants to know where there's one other transaction which we haven't considered, and that's a gift. What if it's gifted? So under those circumstances, does the kedusha go away? Yes or no? Matana. So pligi bar Ravacha v'Ravina chad aser v'chad sharei. One says it's prohibited; the other says it would be permitted. Mandasa by tipka kedusha sa. So the one that says it's aser says, look, by matana. So what are you exchanging it with? Meaning the idea of a shul deconsecrating, meaning that has to be either bartered or purchased, and that means there's something. There's something that is being handed in exchange for the shul. But over here, if we're just talking about a matana, where it's just changing hands from one to another, it hasn't changed hands. Uman deshare ilav dehava lehana mine lo hava yahiv le. On the other hand, one could say, look, what's a gift? So a gift is one directional, yes and no. Meaning, on one hand, at the time of the gift, it is in fact one directional, but there's always an assumption of some form of reciprocity. I know we all want to think that we are all the most altruistic of people, and that when we give a gift, so obviously I'm doing it from the goodness of my own heart. However, embedded within every gift is the understanding that, okay, look, if the time comes, if the need comes, I can call on you. So there is some sort of built-in reciprocity.
Goodwill.
Yeah, there's some built-in reciprocity, some goodwill
obligation,
that's established.
Obligation formation.
Yep, that's established with the gift. And so as a result of that, so the argument you can make is that when you gift a shul, because of its goodwill, so it will in fact, the kedusha will in fact go away. And then his conclusion is that a gift is like a sale. Tan Rabbanan, we're finishing up our daf today. Kizvina, which means that the kedusha goes away. Meaning this discussion that we're having right now is the Hafkasa Kedusha. In other words, the question of whether you're allowed to or not allowed to sell it, that's Yamad Aleph. On this particular sugya over here, the assumption is that you can sell it. In other words, now again, when we say you can sell it, we're talking about a private shul, we're talking about a public shul. So but in other words, over here, we're assuming it's the kind of shul you can sell. And now it's just a question of Hafkasa Kedusha. Tana Rabbanan. Tashmisha mitzvah nizrakin. Tashmisha kedusha nignazin. Something that was used for a mitzvah, you could throw it away. Okay? A frequently asked question. I sell a couple of lulavim. So frequently asked question, what do I do with the lulav after Sukkot is over? So the shock, when I say you throw it out. So the, now I know, the minhagim, you hold it till Pesach, you burn it with the chametz, good, very good. As far as the halach is concerned, you can throw it out. It's tashmishei mitzvah. Now, of course, you should be a little, you should be respectful, you should wrap it up before throwing it out. But the Gemara right here in Megillah, chavava medbeis. So tashmishei mitzvah, so nizrakin, you could discard it. Tashmishei kedusha, so that has to go into Geniza. Eilein tashmishei mitzvah, examples of things used for a mitzvah. Sukkah, lulav, shofar, tzitzis. Good. Eilein tashmishei kedusha, examples of things that are of tashmishei kedusha. Anything that facilitated a sefer. So, deluskame, sfarim, tefillin and mezuzos. Any bag or any case that is used for the purposes of a sefer Torah, tefillin and mezuzos. V'tikshel sefer Torah. Another type of bag of a sefer Torah, a mantle, if you will. Nartikshel tefillin, right? A tefillin bag. Or ritzua sehem, and also the ritzuas as well. Interesting, the Gemara over here describes the ritzuas as not part and parcel of the tefillin, but rather, the Gemara over here is describing it as tashmishe kedusha, but not kedusha itself. Tosfos over here, really interesting Tosfos. I'm not going to go through it today, this morning, with apologies. But Tosfos talks about, what about the dalad? What about the yod? The knots on the tefillin, are they not kedusha themselves? So Tosfos makes an argument. Nope, they're not. In other words, the shin on the actual bias of the tefillin has kedusha, but not the dalad, not the yod. See Tosfos for that discussion right over here. Amarava Mirshav Amina. Okay, so now we know our basic delineation that Tashmisha Mitzvah can be discarded, Tashmisha Kedusha have to be put into Geniza. So now the Gemara says, Hav Amina. So here's what I thought, says Rava. At first I thought that high Kursaya. Kursaya is some sort of Bima Shal Eitz, some sort of wooden Bima. So Tashmisha Tashmisha Vishare. So you know what? It doesn't directly facilitate the Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah is not put directly on it. Now, I do struggle a little bit to understand this, meaning because of the cover. Because obviously it's resting on the bima. In other words, that's just simply how gravity works. And so it's not directly on because there's some sort of cover on it. But without the bima, the Sefer Torah is going to be on the floor. So over here, when we're talking about Tashmishin, it sounds like from the Gemara that we're being super literal over here. That has to be in direct contact with the actual Sefer Torah itself. So Tashmishu v'shari kevin dechazina demusve yilave sefer Torah. But then sometimes I say that what they do is they sometimes use the bima directly, meaning that there's no cover placed on the bima, and they put the sefer Torah directly on the bima. So now I know that the bima itself has the status of Tashmish Kedusha. So I mean a Tashmish Kedusha of Asr, and therefore it will have the status of Tashmish Kedusha. You cannot discard it, but rather has to be put to Geniza. V'amar avam reshav amina hai prisa. A second item that he's describing over here, so Tashmishu Tashmishu, Rashi describes it as some sort of interior lining of the Aron, where it's not directly touching the Sefer Torah. So Kim de Chazina Daifele Umanche Sefer Ilave, Amina Tashmish Kedusha Huva Asur. But then I see how it's used. In other words, sometimes it's used as an inner lining, and sometimes it's taken out and the Sefer Torah is put directly on it. So now I see that it's used in direct contact with the Sefer Torah. So I had to change my tune regarding that as well. V'amarava ha'itibuta de'irpat mi'av de'teva zutrase sharei kursaya asur. So now if I have an aron, right? An old aron. And Rashi describes it, aron shen is kalkel v'nifran mi'chiburo. Okay, it's falling apart. And so what do I want to do? I want to repurpose it. So if I make it into a teva zutrase, if I just make it into a smaller aron, that's very good. However, to make it into a bima, so that's going down a level, and you can't do that. V'amarav a high priest de bala lemi av de priest l'sifre sharei. So if I have a mantle that's wearing out, and so I want to now use it for other sfarim, so that would be fine, l'chumash amaser. But I can't use it for a chumash. Well, what does that mean? Rashi explains. A chumash over here means a fifth of the Torah, right? Well, as the word indicates. But again, when we say chumash over here, we're not talking books. We're talking about scrolls. So over here, a sefer Torah where I have all five of the chumashim in one sefer that has more kedusha than just a scroll that only has brachos or a scroll that only has shmos on it. And so therefore, if the mantle was used for a whole sefer Torah, I can repurpose it for another sefer, but what I can't do is I can't repurpose it for just a chumash, because that's going down a level in Kedusha.
Same thing with two botiklasias. Take the old one and make a new one. You have the same Kedusha.
Right, right, right. But if I'm just using it for just a chumash, the Gemara feels that that's a drop-off. That's what the Gemara says. So if I have these kinds of sacks that are used for Sfarim, so that's considered Tashmish Kedusha and therefore has to be Ben Geniza Pshita, the Gemara says good. I think we would have figured that out at this point in time. So no, so the Gemara says, well, maybe the way they function is not for covered purposes, but rather they're just simply protective in nature. And so if something is fundamentally just for the purposes of protection, so the Gemara says, maybe then it does not have the status of Tashmish Kedusha. So Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says, so what we just come to learn is no. Now, with a lot of Kamash Malans, here's being an example of one. So what are we rejecting? Are we rejecting the idea that this particular mantle now is not just for security purposes, but it's also for covered purposes, and that's why it has Kedusha? Or is the Kamash Malan coming to tell me that even though something is used specifically for security, but if it's a security of a Sefer Torah, it obtains the status of Tashmishe Kedusha? So I'm unclear in terms of which argument the Gemara just rejected. Gemara, we're going to finish up today with the following episode. And that is that there was a Roman shul in Bavel. Okay? We're wandering. We go around all the time. So you're going to find over here in Florida a lot of different types of shuls. A Syrian shul, a Moroccan shul, okay? And so forth and so on. You may even find Ashkenazic shuls here. You never know. So we have Shtiblach. Okay, good. So over there, so nothing changed in the last 1,700 years. So over there in Bavel, so they had Jews from Rome. That's the way Rashi describes it over here. So you had Jews from Rome who made their way to Bavel, and they made a Roman shul. Okay, they had their menhagim. So they made a Roman shul. So and next to this Roman shul, you had some sort of foyer or right adjoining room, and there was a mace in that room. And now the problem is that there's a doorway between the two, and the Kohanim wanted to daven the shul. And so what do we do? So vahavu kahane lemeil litzluy hasam, and the Kohanim wanted to come in and wanted to daven. Obviously not in the shul with the mace, but rather in the adjoining room. So is there a way to partition? That's the Gemara's question. Asu amar le Rav amar lehu daluti tevusa usve davele klietz asu lenachas. V'klietz asu lenachas en mekabel toma. So what you'll do is you'll take the teva and you use the teva as a partition. Okay, now, the Gemara, it's funny because the Gemara is just really focusing right now on the chatzitza that's going to be created by the teva. What about the fact that basically what you're doing is you're making usage of the teva other than for the aron? Okay. It's so interesting. The Gemara does not address that point. The Gemara is just right now just laser focused on the fact as to whether or not it can actually serve as a halachic barrier between the two rooms. So what the Gemara's argument is that it's a kli ha'asul enachas. Any kli that's meant to permanently stay in one location does not have the status of a kli. Therefore, it's not mekabel tuma. Therefore, it's going to be a chatzitza. So, and the Gemara says exactly that. V'chol kli tassul enachas enem mekabel tuma. V'chotzitz b'fnei atuma. So, amale rabban l'rava v'hazim nende metatale ki manach sefer Torah ilavei v'havale metatale male v'reikan. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you're wrong about your assumption. Meaning that this sefer Torah is in fact moved around both when it's full and when it's empty as well. And so therefore it does qualify as a kli. Therefore it is going to be mekabel tuma. And therefore it's not going to be a chatzitza b'fnei atuma. To which the Gemara says, the hachilo efshar. Oh, so the Gemara says, okay, you're right. So the teva is not going to be a good chatzitza. And right now we have no good solution. As long as the mace is in the other room, in the adjoining room, so we don't have a good solution for how the Kohanim could be davening in this room over here. Okay.
Could they have the building have the same roof?
Yeah. It must.
Doesn't have a roof?
I mean, obviously.
Connect them anyway besides?
No, if there's a wall separating them, so then no. No, you need a door. In order for the tumah to go from one room to another room. Okay, Adkan, we're going to stop over here. Let's quickly recap. Let's review. We started the fourth parak of the Masechta this morning, and that is a discussion of shuls and kedusha. So our Mishnah told us that when you sell a shul, actually it starts when you sell a street, the public, the town square. So you can only go up in kedusha, you cannot go down in kedusha. In the Mishnah, six levels of kedusha, starting from the rechov, going all the way up to a sefer Torah. And so therefore, when you sell, so the proceeds can only be used for going up, not going down. What about making a lateral movement? Mishnah didn't say. And from the Mishnah itself, you can get confused in terms of whether or not it would be appropriate to make a lateral movement. The Gemara notes a couple of things on the Amud Aleph. Number one, our Mishnah is, in terms of a Rechov having Kedusha, is only the position of Rabbi Menachem, the Chachamim disagree. Okay. Which then led me wondering, do we pass on like our Stam Mishnah? Do we pass on like the Chachamim? Good. Anyway, that requires more clarification. So whether or not one can actually sell a shul. So the Gemara says there's a distinction between a private shul and a public shul. Private shul is sellable. Public shul is unsellable. Not for sale. You can't sell it. Now, why should that be? So we went through a Tosfos this morning that offered two pshatim in terms of why it is that a public shul cannot be sold. It's either because it's made for the public or because the public actually helped finance it. The second pshat in Tosfos seems to fit in a little bit better with some of the Gemara as we pointed on today's daf. A lengthy discussion on the Amud Aleph that really ended the Amud Aleph in terms of whether or not Yerushalayim was divided amongst the Shvatim or not divided amongst the Shvatim. And then as we got to the Amud Beis, so then we talked about the if I sell a shul using with the approval of the board of directors and the membership, so then all Kedusha goes away. Okay, why that is, the Gemara doesn't really explain, but all the Kedusha goes away. And the Gemara gave us a couple of examples of this idea actually being put into practice. If it is not sold with the approval of the board and the membership, so then the Kedusha retains, and that's what we discussed basically for the remainder of today's daf. So if the sale is done with an exchange or an actual sale, so then the actual shul itself, the Kedusha goes away because the Kedusha now goes to the money, and the Kedusha, or the Kedusha goes to whatever it's being bartered against. But if it's just rented or mortgaged against, so then the Kedusha is still there. What about a Matana? The Gemara said regarding a Matana, back and forth, the Gemara's conclusion is that a Matana is going to be viewed as a sale, in that the Kedusha, in fact, goes away from the shul. And then on the Amud Beis, big topic today in terms of Tashmishi Mitzvah versus Tashmishi Kedusha. Tashmishi Mitzvah can be discarded, and Tashmishi Kedusha have to be put into a Geniza. What is Tashmishi Mitzvah? Shofar, Tzitzis, Lulav, etc., etc. What is Tashmishi Kedusha? Anything used facilitating an actual Sefer. So when I say Sefer, I mean it in the classic sense, Sefer Torah, presumably. And then from that point going forward, a number of accoutrements in the shul that wanted to be repurposed. And so based on this rule that you can only go up in Kedusha and not go down in Kedusha, so what can it be repurposed for? We talked about a bima. We talked about an interior covering of the Aron. We talked about an old Aron being repurposed into a smaller Aron. Okay, so we gave a number of those examples. And then we ended off today with a story regarding a shul that was adjoining another room. There was a doorway. There was a mace in the other room. Kohanim wanted to dive in the shul. And whether or not we could use the Aron for a chatzitza, and the Gemara says, no, the Aron has the status of a kli, and therefore it's not going to serve as a chatzitza.